You're listening to an American Theater podcast. American Theater is published by Theater Communications Group. www.americantheater.org.
Welcome to Off Script, American Theater's podcast on all things theatrical. This is our special Grinch holiday edition. Now we're going to talk about holiday. We're going to talk about holiday shows a little bit. We have to gear up for this because I think all of us, I wouldn't say we're weary of holiday shows because I don't think we've seen that many in our lifetime. But we're the kind of theater goers who see so much theater during the year that actually getting a holiday from the theater is kind of what we enjoy at the holidays. But we know that a lot of our member theaters and a lot of theaters around the country do some great holiday shows and alternative holiday shows. And holiday shows are, as we've talked about here, and it's sort of a piece of conventional wisdom, holiday shows are the sort of Christmas and Easter or high holidays for the theater where some theater goes are introduced to the theater for the first time, or people just go just to that one thing every year. Like people just go to the Christmas and Easter services or high holidays at the temple. I'm here joined by my fellow senior editor,
Eliza Bent. Hello.
And managing editor,
Susie Evans. Yeah. Hi.
To talk about, I wanted to throw out to you, have you either appeared in a holiday show or was a holiday show one of your first experiences of the theater, either of you?
I think my first experience ever in the theater was performing in my church's Christmas pageant.
Right, right, right.
Like when you were like 3 to 5, you were an angel and you like sucked on your candle, your like magnetic or whatever,
okay.
Flashlight
That's
candle.
That's not a good idea.
And then 5 to like 7, you were a shepherd. And okay. So then you like actually got to sing and dance.
Right.
And like then when you were older than 8, you could like get cast as like Mary or a wise man or like
right.
The angel Gabriel. I think the last time I did it, I was like 14 and I got to be Mary. So it was like,
it's weird. My church, we didn't do a Christmas pageant, but I remember playing Jesus in a sort of Garden of Gethsemane scene when I was like 5 and my hair was just long enough I thought I should tie it in a ponytail because Jesus had long hair. It was, yeah, I remember this now. This is all coming back to me.
Well, you had long hair as a 5-year-old?
Long enough to pull it into a tiny little ponytail.
Long enough for a pony?
Yeah.
Well, our like youth pastor at our church
was the 70s. What can I say?
He was a theater grad of Stanford, and so yeah. When he came in, he started like writing original Christmas pageants. So we had like original music in our Christmas pageant. It was like original musical. All the little like 5-year-olds, the 5-year-olds were then the sheep, and they sang this song called like Ba Ba Bop and jumped around and danced. It's pretty cute.
Wow.
Was Ba Ba Bop to a bebop beat? Or
no, it's like, I'm trying to think of the tune. It's like, Ba Ba Bop, and then it's like some clapping, and it's just like 2-year-olds in cotton balls.
Wow.
I hope he's listening now. Yeah, so I
don't have any experience with holiday shows.
Holiday shows, yeah.
Beyond, I would go to the Nutcracker as a child.
I think I went a few times as a...
And boo loudly.
As a child.
Just kidding. I never booed.
I think I went a few times as a child. I know that I saw at least 1 or 2 Christmas carols as a child, and there was the South Coast Rep is still doing the one I saw there years ago with Hal Landon Jr. I really struggled to come up with any holiday shows that I recall in my adult life that fondly, but I thought of one, and it's a great idea. I don't see anyone doing it this time of year. It's sort of an off holiday show. It's called not off. I mean, just sort of not directly a holiday show, but it's a wintry and it's. It warms the heart. So it's 1940s Radio Hour, Walton Jones's show, which is basically just a review of 1940s songs and ads with a sort of a story. But I saw it in this little theater in LA called Actors Co-op. And, you know, it's LA, so it was probably, you know, 50 outside. But they created a really realistic snow outside the radio studio. And it was like a little time capsule. I enjoyed that quite a bit. And just looking through the schedules this month, I see people really reaching for alternatives to Santa Land Diaries and Christmas Carol. I mean, Santa Land Diaries used to be the alternative, but now it's sort of an established one. But there's The Christmas Story, the musical. There's also...
Which is great. It was Tony nominated. It's a fantastic. It's actually a surprising... Not surprising, but it's
surprisingly
a good musical.
Good?
It's really good. The score got a Tony nomination. And
it hasn't been picked up as much as you might think, though. It's in Omaha. It's a couple other places.
I don't think it's on a tour, though. I think it's just kind of...
No, it's licensed.
Yeah, there's one in St. Louis, I want to say. There's one in Texas, Dallas, Omaha, maybe.
I was struck by there are 3 Beauty and the Beasts around the country, and I'm not sure what that's about. I look for sort of trends, but I see some people doing farces and sort of crowd-pleasing musicals this time of year. I don't know if that's holiday-related. But I also see for some reason, there's a Panto Beauty and the Beast at a place called Theater Britain in Plano, Texas. There's a reimagined one at Arden Theater Company that Whit McLaughlin did that looks really cool. And there's also one at the Synetic Theater in Arlington, Virginia that sort of – I don't know if people are returning to fairy tales or it's just a totally a coincidence. These are not Disney Beauty and the Beast. Well, these are the original tale.
I would think it's probably two things. One is that – maybe Beauty and the Beast. Well, in the Disney version, there is a moment during the holidays where there's like
it's snowy, right?
Snowing. But then also, I feel like families do get together and go to the theater around the holiday
time. That's true.
Time.
Right. That's like, right. So family.
That's something that my family likes to do a lot when we get together around Christmas time is go to the theater.
Along those lines, I have to salute Gable Stage in Florida is doing Bad Jews. I think we want to give equal time. I don't know if that's really a feel good movie for Jewish people, but a feel-good play for Jewish people. But it is, you know, equal time for those not of the Christian faith. I have to give props for probably the most bold counter-programming I've seen. There's people who do Krampus Christmas, which is like a evil occult Christmas at Seven Stages in Georgia, in Atlanta. There's things like Bloody Merry Christmas, which is just like, or Bob's Holiday Office Party, which are just like trashy. There's a trailer park, Great American Trailer Park Christmas musical. But I think someone doing Bengal Tiger, Unicorn Theater in Kansas City, Missouri, doing Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo, that's probably one of the least feel-good holiday shows I can think of to do. And so props to them.
Is it a holiday show? Or they're
no,
just
that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm
year.
Saying. It's one of the least feel-good shows to do around the time of the holidays. I think it's a great antidote.
Well, one of my favorite, like, original or new holiday shows that I've seen on the docket for this season is the...
I'm so sorry. I don't mean to interrupt, Susie. I'm just flummoxed by some of the things Rob has been saying.
Sorry.
Why?
I don't know. I just... The holidays, man.
Yeah, I know. What can I say?
Like, it's a weird thing, holiday theater, or theater that's, like, supposed to be for the holidays.
Totally
like,
agree.
Like, I think it's weird to like... I appreciate you applauding Gable Stage for doing Bad Jews and and the Unicorn for doing Bengal Tiger, not Baghdad Tiger. But yeah, like, I don't know why it's a strange thing, this focus on the holiday theater, the theater that has to happen at a certain time of year. I can understand why it's a nice moment for people to come together, families to go on outings or something,
right,
especially
right.
as a special thing that they don't usually do. But as a regular theater goer, I get very uncomfortable with holiday theater discussions.
Right.
Perhaps I should recuse myself from this podcast. Susie, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No,
that's
but now I have
me.
A question for you. Do you think though that theater leaders or our programmers are thinking about the holidays when they program their seasons?
Absolutely.
I'm sure they are. They're,
right.
What's striking to me is how many theaters just take a break. They just like end at Thanksgiving. And they just have no show in December.
Yeah,
or they have special holiday events, but they don't do a play. Because how can they counter-program?
It's a hard time of year to make theater when there are a million holiday parties.
Right.
It's gross outside. Why go to the theater when you can have an eggnog with some pals?
Exactly. Well, I mean, as a theater goer, I even feel that. And I'm not even making theater. My point is more, it does feel like counter-programming to put up a meaty, challenging show in December. You know,
counter programming.
Yeah,
sure.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying like,
it's
Bengal Tiger.
Move. It's a bold move.
Bengal Tiger with a Santa hat on. I'm not, you know.
Right.
I'm
no.
saying.
No, I know.
You know what I mean?
But I mean, no Broadway shows open around the holidays. They're
right,
all
exactly.
done. They run and they do good business.
Well, yeah, it's a really good time for business.
But they don't
tickets
open.
Prices are up. Yeah, yeah.
They don't start trying to drum up business. Like there's all the talk about, you know, Honeymoon in Vegas, and like other new musicals aren't doing great at the box office right now because they're just started previews. They're not open yet.
Oh, right.
They haven't generated a lot of buzz. There's no reviews out yet. And if someone's coming into the city for the holidays, they're probably going to a Wicked or Lion King, not a new musical.
Yeah, or something they've heard
and
of.
And these open in January. These
they
Broadway
open in January,
shows.
But they're like starting previews right now. I'm trying to think if there's another one in the same camp. And like nothing against Honeymoon. I hear it's, you know, fantastic and that it did really well at Paper Mill, but it's, you know, they
it's
don't have the
time.
Buzz of reviews,
yeah.
And they're not open yet, but they've started previews during this tough period where tourists are coming in for different shows. That's a whole different conversation. But
I was just interested. I wonder if the – we talked about this before. If the audience for holiday shows, specifically Christmas and holiday shows, is different from the regular audience and whether they theaters ever see these people again or if it's a way to get them on their list. In much the same way people go into, you know – of religious services, they try to like put on a really good service so people might come back or might bring their kids back at some point.
Well, I have an interesting family anecdote kind of about that, about kind of unique holiday shows. You're talking about Bengal Tiger or Bad Jews. Yes. My family and I, we always go to see a show around the holidays. Usually it's a crowd-pleasing musical. I'm from the Bay Area, San Francisco. And we would go to see Wicked or, you know, any whatever's at the Koran or some big touring shows. But then one year, there wasn't a big touring show in town, and my family always likes to go to the theater. And they're theater goers, but more of, like, the commercial, like, frou-frou variety.
Right,
went to see Christopher Durang's Mrs. Bob Cratchit's Wild Christmas Binge, which is a straight play. I don't remember exactly what it's about, but it's kind of...
What year did you see this show in?
2007, I believe. It's a Christmas Carol. It's a spoof of A Christmas Carol. It's
right.
By Christopher Durang. So it's all the lovely things people love about Christopher Durang. And let me just say, I love Christopher Durang, but I don't know if my parents are exactly his target audience. We're in a regional theater in the Bay Area in California. And I just remember my parents leaving the theater and my brothers leaving the theater. And my brothers, to this day, will still not go to the theater with me.
Really?
During the holidays. Even if it's like a musical, which they'll like. They're like, remember that time we had to go to that play?
Why? Is like, it wasn't good or what?
It was good, but it like wasn't their cup of tea. And so like, while I could see them like trying to bring people in with a show like that, it was great for me. I mean, I'm a theater, but that to me feels like something that would fit better in a different time of the season. But it's a spoof of A Christmas Carol, so of course they put it in the holidays. But it's a Durang spoof of A Christmas Carol, so it's a unique voice in the theater.
I have never seen A Christmas Carol.
Really?
I have a confession. I have never seen A Christmas Carol.
Right.
I saw something about Scrooge, Ebenezer Scrooge, a cartoon, and a duck.
That's Scrooge McDuck, yes.
That's my cultural fluency.
I have no idea how faithful it is.
Bereft in this. I really feel like an imposter on this particular episode of this
That's really
podcast.
Okay.
Forgive
really
me.
Okay.
But hopefully I'm a needed voice for those who also don't know a lot of holiday theater.
Right.
I guess listening to this podcast.
Just reminds me, I don't want to take any more time, much more time, but it reminds me that I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the show I was actually cast in, sort of stunt casting, when I was editor at Backstage West. Cornerstone Theater did a bridge show a lot of LA residencies in 1999 at the Mark Taper Forum. This is the big deal, called For Here or To Go, in which they took this Elizabethan play, I think it is, Night of the Burning Pestle, as their basis. And to make a fairly long story short, in the play, it's sort of this multicultural holiday play that included Ramadan, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, and Christmas. Ramadan that year was very close to Christmas, actually. And the play gets interrupted by the audience. It says, we don't like this. We want to have our stories reflected. And so the play turns into this chaos. And then near the end, I stood up to say, one character says, you know, who cares? No one's even reviewing this. This is, you know, someone says this play's a mess. And I stood up to say, actually, I'm reviewing it. I'm from Backstage West. And then they pulled me up on stage and I sang the final song. It was at the Mark Taper Forum.
What?
The one thing that's special about it was the last year, the last Christmas I spent with my mom, she came to see that. So she got to see me both be in a show and say, I'm Rob Kent from Backstage West, which she was very proud of. So it was pretty awesome.
Wait, what is the show called? For Here or To Go?
It was a devised play by Cornerstone.
I was going to say, why aren't other theaters doing this?
And well, they sang the final song?
I forget. It had a bunch of adjectives for Christmas. Yeah, it was a sort of a holiday.
That's amazing.
A holiday show. Yeah, I forgot about that.
You performed at the Mark Taper Forum.
I did. I was on my resume for a while. But
what is the? How did the song go that you sang?
I wish I could remember. Have a holly jolly something. It was
have a holly jolly Christmas.
No, it was. It, this,
have
I,
a
the,
happy
Michael
Manza.
Abels, I think, was the composer, and he wrote a really, really smart, funny sort of take on a holiday with all these adjectives piled up. I can't remember I have the tape somewhere. Anyway, it was this huge multicultural cast on the stage singing this song at the Taper. It was pretty awesome. I just leading off. I mean, you know, like I was the first voice and then everyone joined.
Did you actually review the show?
No. And it was actually really weird to be on the other side because it got mixed reviews. And I was like some of my peers going, I had that experience of like, you just didn't get it. What are you talking about? Like, you know, I was inside a show. And I couldn't. It was actually a great gift.
Did you have to go to all the rehearsals?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, all the real rehearsals. I mean,
I think we have to hear this song next.
I will. I'll cue it up. at some point. Yeah, yeah. It was. So that's a holiday show. Great holiday memory, I guess, you know?
Yeah, I think that anecdote takes the cake.
We had Sohu Manza at my high school.
What was it called?
Sohu Manza. It was for
Happy Solstice.
Solstice, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa.
Okay.
So that's how we rolled.
Wait.
But that wasn't really a show. That was just people giving each other little tchotchkes and stuff. I don't know.
Sounds like it would make a good show.
Happy Sohu Manza. Yeah, maybe I should write a holiday show.
Yeah, I think.
I think that's the verdict of this podcast.
Obviously,
well,
I think
people could probably make a lot of money if they write a good show.
Oh yeah,
because then
the
theaters would do that show, I suppose.
Yeah, every season.
But I do think that it's a different audience for the holiday show.
Yeah, you're right.
Some regular people go, sure, but I think it's also some once a years.
Or it's the kind of thing like Susie, who's a theater goer, taking her less frequent theater going people
to
the theater.
Right.
Yeah, like when people.
And so they want to expect something in a nice, tidy bow. They don't want to see, you know, Bengal Tiger, maybe.
It's interesting. Also looking around the country, the big theaters in town, the big Lord theaters, including ACT, Denver Center, Guthrie, a lot of them seem to be doing Christmas Carol. I mean, unsurprisingly, but.
Well,
they just are like.
It's good, though, right? Like, it's a good. Is it a good?
It's a good story, yeah.
It's a good story.
It's
good,
pretty reliable.
I mean, I
just watched the Muppet version with Michael Caine with my sons, and I teared up. It's a good version.
There's a lot of stage adaptations, though, aren't there? There's a lot of different versions.
Well, that's
do.
The other thing is, I think every theater has their own adaptation.
Yeah.
There's been a few that have gone around the country. Like Patrick Barlow has one that's done a lot. Doris Baisley had one that was sort of a Commedia version. It's weird how people – how much is there really to adapt? But everyone seems to do their own version, maybe because it's public domain and it's cheaper or something.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited. I'm not going to see it, but I think it sounds really cool. It's the Second City in Goodman Theater, Twist Your Dickens.
Yeah, that sounds like fun.
Which is a kind of an improv comedy take on Christmas Carol.
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds like a lot of fun they're doing. But, like, the Goodman is doing a Christmas Carol like they always do, and then Second City, I believe – in their smaller space,
is doing it.
Twister
okay.
Dickens.
Yeah, there does seem to be a niche audience. It probably is what that Durang thing was for. Of like,
I liked the Durang
grown up people who don't want a syrupy show. You know, they want something that's sort of more edgy or adult.
Or people who have seen 1,000 Christmas
exactly.
Carols. I want to see a spoof of it.
Right.
But I don't know if the people that are coming to the theater around Christmas have seen 1,000 Christmas Carols.
Right.
Or maybe they have.
But that it's a ritual.
I mean,
like church, that's what they want to see.
Maybe that should be my resolution, to see a Christmas Carol this holiday
season.
You mean
your pre-New Year's resolution?
My pre...
your Christmas resolution?
Get one last resolution in before the start of the year.
The question is, in New York, can you even see Christmas Carol?
Does
anyone do it here?
My friend's in one right now. It's like a musical version of it.
There's one in Queens.
Go for it.
And there's one in Long Island.
Probably
somewhere. I don't know. Yeah, there has to be. But I should say this. I have seen like a version of. I saw a show that was using a lot of like video that was taking tons of Christmas Carol.
Reed Farrington's
Christmas Carol spin.
Yeah, and we put that on our cover.
It was on our cover a number of years ago, and I saw that, and I was very perplexed because I had never seen a Christmas
Carol.
You
had the reference point. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I couldn't. I was like, oh right, this is the one with the Scrooge. And the little Timmy Tiggins.
Tiny Tim.
Whatever. The small child.
Timmy Tiggins.
It's real. Like, I'm actually, like, it's horrible. Like, I should really.
I feel like that's the name of your show, though. Like,
Timmy Tiggins
and the Scrooge.
Timmy Tiggins,
or
yeah.
Or something, like, what about something called Carol's Christmas? That could be a real
word.
Adaptation. I don't know. But I should probably see it so that I can speak, literally.
It's all right.
Well,
everybody wins in the end.
That's my whole of. I just have no desire. I feel like holiday themed things. It's like something about it feels like drivel to me, which
yes.
is horrible. I shouldn't say that because what's that story? What's that Jimmy Stewart movie?
It's a Wonderful Life. Yeah,
that's a wonderful movie.
It's a great movie.
But
so it's a Christmas story. That's a wonderful movie.
But I do think anything that feels obligatory does sort of feel that again. You know. But I realize I can't be too worried about it. I have two young children who have to be inculcated into the joys of Christmas.
That's right. Will you
all
be taking them
again.
To see any Christmas stuff?
Not theater, probably. My church does do a little pageant that I play music in. But actually, the kids will be singing in that. But yeah, there's not much to that. It's all very baffling at that age, you know. It's all a mix of like cartoons and Jesus and Santa, and you don't know what's what, you know.
You know, there's presents though.
There's presents, exactly. They're confused by that. So if it's Jesus' birthday, why do we get presents? Like, well, because. All right. Well, I think that's a wonderful. We've said all we can about holiday shows. We'll be back after our interview with Ada Gray, the phenomenal.
Sorry. What's that? Never mind. I was thinking about like they don't do theater on Arbor Day. There's no like Arbor Day theater,
right.
Is there?
There should be.
Or Easter plays or Seder plays. Well,
there's
the
Passion plays, but yeah.
Well, I guess that's
right,
true.
Right.
Sorry, Ada Gray, you were saying.
Ada Gray, the 10-year-old Chicago phenom who reviews theater for her blog. It's just called Ada Gray's I Review Theater. I forget what it's called.
Anyways,
too. Susie Evans interviewed her, and here's that interview. We'll be back afterwards with recommendations.
So I'm going to kick us off here. This is Susie Evans. I'm the managing editor of American Theater, and we're talking today with Ada Gray, who is a young theater critic and performer based in Chicago, and we're excited to hear from her about how she got into it and hear more about what sorts of theater she loves. So thanks so much for joining us, Ada. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
So how did you get interested in theater?
Well, my dad's an actor, and I went to go and see some of his shows. And then my mom had an idea that she wanted my grandparents to see what I thought of theater and all my TV shows and art exhibits. And so she made a blog for me. And then when I was about 5 years old, I did a review of Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark in New York. And but it was before a lot of other people had seen it because it was in the previews. So then I wrote a review of that. And then a comic book site found me and posted it places. And then people started following me. So. And how it started, basically.
That's fun. Was that your first trip to New York?
Yes, it was. No, actually, was that my second? That was my second one.
Had you seen a show the first time you came?
Yeah, we saw like a little like puppet show when I was little, but then that was my first like real show in New York.
Cool. What did you think of it?
It was actually pretty fun, but the. It was really fun, but the thing was, they put in Arachne. I don't know if she's still in there anymore, but it was kind of odd to have a person from Greek myth, and then they also added in a bunch of other characters that aren't actually usually in Spider-Man. So that's the only problem that I really had with it.
Yeah. What made you want to write a review? Did you love to write? Did you love writing about it? What made you want to write a review of shows?
Well, I really liked, I took acting classes and I love to see theater, and then once I started doing that, I just was like, it was actually my mom's idea to do all of it, and I just wanted to write down my ideas and what they were like and my opinion on different things.
Yeah, and I love how you start your reviews. You start with Once Upon a Time for all your
reviews.
Yes. How did you come up with that?
Well, I really liked reading books when I was little, and I still do, but most of the books that I read, and like I had storybooks, and I just thought that everything should start with Once Upon a Time. And so it just has gone on and on and on, and I just decided to keep it all these years.
Yeah. And what's kind of your process for writing the review? Do you write it right after the show? Do you talk about it with your friends or with your mom about the show you saw? How do you kind of put together what you post on your blog?
Well, what we do is we just, I usually like, I don't always just go home and write the review because sometimes it's like 11 o'clock at night and then I have to go to sleep. And then I usually do it around like the second day. And then I talk to my friends and my mom about it or after we've seen the show. And then when I actually want to write the review, we just sit down in my living room and we look over like the pictures for it, and we look over all the different ask Bex if I have any questions, I ask them. And then you start writing the review, and then my mom helps me, and then I just write down different things that I liked or disliked about the show.
Yeah, that's so cool, and it's such a great learning experience. And you're homeschooled, right?
Yes, I am homeschooled.
So it's kind of going to theater and writing about it kind of part of your curriculum, part of what you do for school?
Yes, it actually is. Like, every day my mom's like, okay, so what we have to do today is math, reading, writing, and write a review. And that's basic. And then we do science and all that stuff, but then also writing reviews and all that stuff is part of our everyday system.
Cool. And you must see a lot of shows in Chicago now.
Yes, I do. I actually had a day where I saw 5 shows in a week.
Oh my gosh.
That was crazy. And I also, when I'm doing theater too, that makes it a little bit harder for me to also see a bunch of theater because sometimes they have the same running schedule as my other shows. So it's been hard lately, but it's been fun.
Yeah. Do you like performing and writing about the shows? Do you like both of them?
Yes, I do. I like both a lot. You get the best of both worlds whenever you do it. Like, you get to feel what it's like to be in a show with the people who are in it. You get to build relationships. You get to build the character. You get to just help along with everything. And then when you see the show, you also get to be an audience member and see the finished product. And like, because when you're in the show, you don't see what it actually looks like.
Yeah. Do you feel like your experience performing and being in shows and having your dad be an actor helps you be a better writer about the shows?
Yeah, I guess so, because I get to know what it's like to, I sort of know what it's like to be inside the show as well as just seeing it. So, and then my dad, when he comes home from a show or something, he tells me about it. And that was before I got into acting, and then I just heard what it was like backstage and what it was like to be an actor, and so that's how it...
Cool. Did your dad take you backstage and you get to meet people your dad works with?
Yes, my dad did take me backstage. My first actual, like, filming thing was backstage for Straw Dog Theater. It was, like, a puppet show that they have on film, and they wanted me to do it, and I, like, did a tour backstage. And I wore this crown that my dad did. It was for Richard III.
Oh,
no,
cool.
No, Richard III. Which one was it?
I think that was for one that Kevin Fox directed. That
what was it called?
it's based on Henry V.
Yes,
it's a line from Henry V. But for some reason, I can't come up. I'll look it up.
Okay. Then so what the and I use like these my puppets that I had at home. And, like, I had, like, a princess puppet and a king puppet, and that I would be, like, singing, like, terribly bad opera, I don't know. And then Kevin Fox, who was the director of the show, I got a little fox puppet, and I said, hello, I'm Kevin Fox, and I'm like, let me show you around my set. And then I posted it on my blog, and then a lot of people saw that. So, well, what was the show called? Okay, he's still looking. Let's see. How can I sense that?
So you did a little puppet show backstage for the puppet show? Did you did a video review?
It was video. Yeah, they videotaped it. So then I didn't have to like memorize anything. It was just basically all improv, and I walked around everywhere. It was a lot of fun, and it was pretty funny because just. I was using, like...
St. Crispin's Day.
St. Crispin's Day was the show.
Oh, great.
And that was the show, so...
Cool.
That was fun.
What are some of your favorite shows that you've seen so far?
That's hard. Well, let's see. I really like The Mikado at the Hypocrites. That is just a great show for everyone, and it's super funny and very interactive, and I really like that show. Let's see.
I'm actually coming to Chicago this weekend, and I'm going to see The Mikado.
Awesome!
Yeah,
are
I'm
you
super excited.
And are you going to see HMS Pinafore and Pirates of Penzance, too?
I don't know if they're playing when I'm there. I'm going to be there Thursday to Saturday, but I'm looking forward to seeing The Mikado.
Yes, The Mikado is
just amazing. And, well, I also really like Wicked. I'm a really big Wicked fan. And, let's see. Burning Bluebeard is a good show. It's pretty scary, but then it's a lot of fun. And it's really, really, it's funny at some points. Like, it's bittersweet. That's what it is.
Cool.
And those are some of my favorite shows.
Cool. I think I'm also going to come see Burning Bluebeard. I heard it's really good. But you.
And also All Our Tragic.
You sat through All Our Tragic, that 11-hour show?
Yeah, I went to go and see that.
You saw the whole thing?
Yes, I did see the whole thing.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, it was a lot of fun. It's just it's just amazing. And then, also Great Expectations at Stradog Theater. That one's really good, too.
Oh, cool.
Like, they have, it's just a great adaptation in general. It's just really awesome.
Yeah, and all of these shows that you're mentioning are running in Chicago right now, except for All Our Tragic, which I think is closed. But The Mikado and Burning Bluebeard and Great Expectations are all up right now. So if you're in the Chicago area, Ada Gray recommends these shows.
Yay!
What about holiday shows? We're coming up on the holidays, and there's lots of great, you know, Christmas Carol and lots of great holiday shows. Do you have any, you know, favorite celebratory performances or holiday shows that you like to see?
Well, I really like the Nutcracker at the House Theater. It's a lot of fun. It's just, like, you can go and see it with kids, but adults will also like it. The puppets are literally amazing, and the acting and the story is just, it's really, really awesome and sweet. I really like it. And then, let's see, what are some other ones? Well, I already mentioned Burning Bluebeard. That's another good holiday show. It's not specifically about the holidays, but it's running during the holidays, so I still call it a holiday show because it's a good way to spend your holiday.
Cool. Have you seen The Christmas Carol at the Goodman?
I saw it a while ago when I was pretty little, but I haven't seen it very recently. But that one, I remember that the special effects and the acting were very good. I remember the bursting out of the painting and all that stuff.
Are there any shows that you're looking forward to that are coming up?
Let's see. What's something that's coming up that I'm really excited for? Oh, this might sound a little bit weird, but I'm actually looking forward to The Hammer Trinity, which I'm in, but also I'm really excited to see the story because I don't even know the third part yet. So I'm really excited to see that. And let's see.
Who do you play in The Hammer Trinity?
Okay, I play one secret role. And then I also play a ghost child of my dad, actually, of Hollow Tom, who is like a vision that he sees in the forest.
Do you review a show if you're in it? Will you write a review of it?
I think I did that once, right? I did that once for the collaboration sketchbook. I was in that, and then my mom reviewed my part, and I reviewed all the other ones. My mom's like freaking out over there. And then, so I wrote a review of like a bunch of the different sections, but then she just came, I just left the room and she wrote the part of my little part of my review.
Cool. Do you like writing a review when you're in the show too? Is that kind of fun?
It is pretty fun because then when I get to do that, you also like get to tell stories that some people wouldn't know, and then people get even more of an experience of the show by just reading my review.
A lot of people, like when I go to the theater, a lot of my friends always ask me, like, what are the good shows to see? What's good out there? And I imagine that you have, you know, different friends, different age friends than someone like me. Do your friends ask you which shows to go see? Do you talk about theater with your friends?
Yeah, like, whenever I have, like, sometimes I get more tickets than I have a family, and so I invite my friends, and then we love to talk about the shows, and it's just, my friends are really awesome, and they just, like, my friend Lana, we went to go and see a show recently, and we just talked about it for a long, long time. Like, it was the BFG at the Emerald City, and that was just really fun. It was very true to the book, and it was just a lot like the BFG, and I love that book, so.
Yeah, we actually had on our cover, our November issue of American Theater was about Roald Dahl on stage, and I talked to, forget what his name is, I think Ernie Nolan at Emerald City about the BFG, and he talked to us about that. So I'm glad you got to see it. I didn't get to see it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Cool. I love Roald Dahl, too. Are you a big Roald Dahl fan?
I am a very big Roald Dahl fan. I'm actually reading Danny, the Champion of the World.
Cool. My favorite book is Matilda.
My favorite one is probably the BFG.
Really?
I like the BFG, yeah.
Yeah, I like the BFG. I like James and the Giant Peach a lot, too.
Yeah, I was actually in a kid's adaptation of that.
Really?
Yeah.
There's a new musical based on it, too, that I'm excited about.
Cool.
Yeah, maybe it'll come to Chicago sometime.
Awesome.
What else are you excited about? Are you excited about the Frozen musical that they keep talking about?
Yes, I am. I really like the movie, and I like the songs, and my friend recently told me, she was like, hey, they're going to make a Frozen musical, and I'm really excited about that. And I told my baby cousin, she really loves Frozen. She sings Let It Go around the house a lot, and I told her about that, and she was just like, she didn't really understand, but she also was excited whenever I say Frozen, so.
I love that you're so excited about theater in Chicago, where you live. That's so exciting. A lot of people that are big theater fans or that love theater always look at Broadway and New York, and so it's fun that you are excited about, you know, Straw Dog and Burning Bluebeard and so fun shows in there. Do you get to come to New York ever? Do you look at the shows that are happening in New York, too?
I do, actually. I come here. I've went to New York three times, I think. I've been to New York three times, and I want to go again, and there are just so many great shows here, so I look at, like, what's running here sometimes, so.
And do you, I mean, this is kind of a sweeping question, so if you don't have an answer, you don't need to, you're so young, but do you want to keep doing, like, theater journalism, theater criticism? Is that something you're really interested in pursuing?
Yes, I really want to keep doing it, like, but I also want to keep acting, so I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep doing it, but I want to try my best to be able to continue doing both kinds of being an actress and being a theater critic.
And then any parting words of advice for, you know, young writers, young people who are interested in theater? You know,
Let's see. Well, if you want, I don't know, like, just do whatever kind of writing you want. And I chose theater. You can choose books or anything. And just write whatever you want. And I love writing. So I hope that everyone loves writing.
Yeah. And I hope more kids like you are coming to the theater. Yeah.
Hopefully
you're getting more kids out there.
Yes. Because there's been a lot more children's theaters opening up and just children's theater in general in different places. And I think that's really great.
Do you like children's theater? Like when you go to children's theater? Because you go to all kinds of theater.
I do like children's theater, but I also like adult theater. Like I like everything basically. I love musicals. I love operas. I love everything.
Cool. How old were you when you first went to your first show?
When I first went to my first show, I was 2, but I started reviewing 2 years later when I was 4.
Oh my gosh. Crazy. You've been doing it longer than I have, I bet. Cool. Well, thanks so much, Ada.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome back. We'll close out the show with a few recommendations.
Closing time.
It's a musical episode.
Party's over.
That's a holiday song.
Is it?
I don't know. It's depressing. Does that count?
The holidays can be depressing.
I feel like the holidays are a mix of schlock, and kind of depressing. Like there should be something saccharine and something sad. Right?
I think that's right. Yeah, yeah. So what are your
Speaking
recommendations?
Speaking of something saccharine and something sad,
I
recommend Birdman.
The movie.
Which is, I guess, saccharine and sad? No, it's not saccharine.
It's not saccharine. Yeah, it's pretty great.
It's very exciting. I saw it the other
day. What struck me, and I haven't read any piece that sort of takes apart its theatrical aspect. I mean, the fact that it all takes place around a theater.
It's ripe for the taking.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, I can't think of any examples of an actual movie star who did a vanity project that he wrote and starred in and produced. So it's, and you know, and the New York Times critic in the piece is kind of a caricature, but But it still feels like it feels like it has a lot of reality to it, right? The backstage.
Absolutely.
Know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like the soundtrack a lot.
Soundtrack. Oh, yeah. The soundtrack was amazing. Yeah.
The score was incredible.
That guy got a lot of work, that drummer, whoever he is, right?
Yeah.
I also should
You don't want to ruin it for people that haven't seen it. It's very good. Go and see it.
I will say, this is a slight spoiler, there's a baffling but wonderful cameo by Stephen Adley Gurgis in a key moment.
Oh, yeah?
It's not a spoiler to say that there's some flying in it, okay? That's not a spoiler. There's not a spoiler, but it's a scene where Keaton ends up on the roof and that guy goes, "You okay? What's going on?"
Oh, that's
Stephen Adley Gurgis. I'm not sure why or how he got into the movie, but it's like a little call out.
That's
to
so
like,
cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then I did like the fact that Jeremy Sheamus, this is not much of a spoiler because it happens very early on.
No, Jeremy's in it.
Jeremy Sheamus plays a really bad actor. And the premise is that he's really bad. And it was interesting to think about, you see him acting, overacting, and then something bad happens to him. And then they're like, "We got to get rid of that guy." Because he's so bad. It's like, what were his directorial choices to like show us how bad he is? Like,
Jeremy Sheamus is actually a really good actor.
He's a great actor. Yeah, exactly. I know. I don't know what else to say about it. It's
movie's incredible. Go see it.
Yes.
I don't know. I also saw another movie recently that was very good. It was called Almost Family. And unlike Birdman, which feels kind of like action packed in a way.
Yeah.
Almost Family is a very like quiet take on things going on in somebody's life. Like there's a lot of like space between, there are these sort of like quiet moments that are dramatized. Whereas with Birdman, you're sort of constantly in motion.
Yeah.
Just interesting to think about these two movies in conversation with each other.
And you said you had a show too.
Oh yeah. And I saw, have you guys seen Anne Liv Young's stuff before?
No.
She's a wild one. She was put in a jail cell at the theater Jack because of her audience interrogations. The one other show of hers that I'd seen, she got into a physical tussle with an audience member who was taking photos, and she'd ask them to stop, and they didn't stop, and da-da-da. So it was like, oh, my God, a fight happened. A boob popped out of a shirt. It was like, whoa. And I mean, she got hurt too, I think, a little bit.
Wow.
But so she was in a jail cell. But then I didn't know this. So last winter festival season, she had gone to some woman's show. I think the woman's name was Rebecca Patek. And I guess the show was about rape. And Anne Liv Young said in her character of Sherry, this therapist character, had said to the audience, "You all are being raped being at this show. This show is disingenuous," and had said some really sounded kind of like questionable things. I wasn't there, and this was being told to me at this performance. So it was a lot of, I felt like I was catching up throughout it of like, wait a minute, what happened? Who is this Anne Liv Young? But it was very strange and fascinating and boring, but in a oddly compelling way. Because she's in this jail cell and she's like, "Well, okay, I don't know how we're going to kill time now." And then she, you know, pees in a bucket and then starts talking to the audience. But the peeing in the bucket was hardly, you know,
what was it,
salacious compared to then her interrogations with the audience.
Right. It didn't live up to the usual Anne Liv Young. There are a lot more bodily fluids.
No, I think that's what was sort of so interesting about it, though, was because it wasn't her usual balls to the wall. I mean, she couldn't get in people's faces.
Right.
She could invite the audience to get close to her jail cell, which she did.
Right.
And she had some friends along for the ride. Her bodyguard and her sister was there, Glorious, doing some amazing workout dance moves. But you know, but she would ask, you know, different audience members, "Okay, who are you? Why are you here? Why are you at the theater tonight? You just came because your friend came?" And, kind of investigating a little bit. But it wasn't as antagonistic as the other time that I had seen her. But still very interesting. And it did make me want to, you know, that performance, the performance art community is a interesting one that I am not very well versed in. And it seems like there's a lot of, like any, you know, community, there's a lot of inner politics. So I was sort of prompted. It makes me want to read about this rape show and calling out. Because then apparently a number of people were protesting the Anne Liv Young show. She was saying, "Are you a spy?" You know,
wow.
She was kind of eviscerating some journalists that were there that night, which was fun to watch.
Wow.
Anyone we know?
Some gal that looked real familiar, she was a freelancer for the New York Times, and she, Anne Liv Young, said, "Well, can I read your notes?" And the girl was like, no, thank you. And she was very, you know, sweetly saying no. And then this other young woman, a writer, was saying, "Sure, you can read my notes," sort of putting on a brave, I don't know. It's hard to say, you know. It's like when you're in that situation, I can see people becoming both shy and or cagey.
It wasn't Joanne Kaufman in the audience.
She would have left.
The reference is to Joanne Kaufman is a
oh, the Broadway bolter.
Yes.
Who I love that article. I don't care what people say.
Well, what's funny about it is that there's a confusion. Like, Joanne Kaufman doesn't really review. She's an arts reporter.
She's a culture commentator is what she does.
For whom? For what?
For the Wall Street Journal. And the thing that's been interesting to me with all this like upheaval about that column, it's basically the summary is that Joanne Kaufman writes the Wall Street Journal about culture, and she basically wrote a column about how she goes to shows on press comps and leaves very often at intermission.
If she doesn't like them,
She doesn't like them. And she cites a lot of shows in it, and so there's a lot of shows. But all the upheaval are people are like, well, I can't believe a paper's critic would leave halfway.
She's not the critic.
But I don't think that the regular layperson understands the difference between a theater critic and a theater reporter or like a culture writer. They don't get it. They think you cover the arts, therefore they think you are a critic, which is something that I run into when I go home for the holidays or whatever, and people are like, oh, Susie, you write about theater. You must be a critic. And I'm like, no. It's interesting that column just eliminated it.
I didn't read the whole column because I bolted at the headline. I liked the headline. I was like, good for you. Leave when you want. But that's another thing that Anne Liv Young is kind of investigating of like, why are you here? If you don't leave, you know, and I wonder about that with, you know, with art shows. And I've definitely left on a number of occasions.
At intermission.
Yeah, but again, it's different in the sense that I certainly would never do that if I was reviewing something. Yeah, but again, this woman wasn't reviewing.
But she was accepting tickets on behalf of the Wall Street Journal for comps.
Which is, I've left when I have paid. I don't think I've ever left.
Yeah, I've left when I have paid. I've never left when I've been invited as a member of the press.
I have. Not regularly, but I do. I mean, it's your job. So what's your recommendation, Susie?
Wait, did you get to recommend?
I will second the Birdman recommendation. And just say that, you know, it's as exciting as watching theater, really, that movie.
Well, I really have to go see Birdman. And I was going to recommend Bradley Cooper and the Elephant Man because I just thought his performance was astounding. But I realized that last time I recommended Emma Stone. And so I'm going to get off the celebrity high horse. And I'm going to recommend something that I haven't seen yet because Rob did it last week and it worked out for him.
Yeah, good.
I'm going to Chicago this weekend to see a bunch of shows in Chicago.
It's a great show, Chicago. Oh, to the town.
I'm going to the town of Chicago, the city, if you will, to see some theater. I did my master's there and I love the theater in that town.
Is there any theater in Chicago?
There's a lot. I'm going to see a lot of shows, but the show I think I'm most excited about seeing, maybe not most, but I think the one I'm going to recommend is because I wrote about it in American Theater's December issue, is the Gilbert and Sullivan rep at The Hypocrites.
Yes.
They're doing their Pirates of Penzance, the Mikado, and HMS Pinafore in rep, and apparently these immersive kind of immersive musical little kind of Gilbert and Sullivan ets, because they're shortened versions of the operettas, are incredible. I've heard nothing but amazing things. Their Pirates of Penzance has been to ART. It's been to Actors Theater of Louisville. The Mikado opened, I think, 2 years ago, and they brought it back again last year. And then HMS Pinafore is new this year. So I'm going to get to see the Mikado, and I'm very excited about it. But
it's basically like hipster Gilbert and Sullivan. Like hipster. They all like have beards and ukuleles.
Well, yeah. They have banjolales. I'm going to forget it, but Mikado is done in like kind of a circus theme.
Right.
Pinafore is like a pajama party.
Right.
And Pirates of Penzance is, I don't know, that's their most popular
Something nautical. They have kiddie pools and a lot of their stuff, don't they?
Beach party. Pirates of Penzance is beach party, Mikado is circus, and HMS Pinafore is pajama party. And Sean Graney adapted and directed them. Apparently, they're just genius, and you can see all three right now in Chicago, and they're playing at the Den Theater, so check them out.
I wish I could see them. They should bring that to New York.
They should. They should bring them to New York.
They should.
They were in Boston or Cambridge. One of them was.
I have never seen the only Gilbert Sullivan I've ever saw was a Mikado Jonathan Miller's at the Wiltern Theater with Dudley Moore. It was a great production because he set it in the 20s and everyone was wearing tennis whites and it wasn't. It sidestepped some of the issues of doing the Mikado by just setting it in the period that it was written in England. You know, so
I've never seen it.
It was beautiful. Yeah,
I saw like a video of HMS Pinafore in my like musical theater history class, and that's about it. So I'm excited about it.
It's fun. Fun, frothy stuff.
Non-traditional theater shows, holiday shows.
Well, with that, we leave you. Have a great, safe holiday time with your family, however you celebrate it, and your loved ones, whoever they are.
And your we pets. Will
pets. Bye now.